What could the death of Kim Jong-il mean for North Korea's economy?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Adrienne Hill, in for Steve Chiatakis. The world is reacting to the death of North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il this morning. For almost two decades, Kim kept the country and its economy isolated. Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Mike Chinoy is a researcher at USC. He says North Korea's economy is a mess.
Run system had all of the inefficiencies that you see in socialist economies exacerbated by all the quirks that the Kim dynasty imposed on it.
There are really two North Korean economies. One's known as the royal court economy. That benefits the country's elites. Then there's the general economy. Most North Koreans are poor. There's widespread hunger and bad infrastructure. John Park is with the U.S. Institute of Peace. He says North Korea doesn't have many trading partners.
We see the Chinese facilitating a lot of commercial and economic development activity along the border area.
A place where North Koreans mine for coal and iron ore. Today, almost two-thirds of North Korea's trade is with China. I'm David Gura from Marketplace.
Kim Jong-il's youngest son, Kim Jong-un, is expected to take control of the country. Joining us now to explain the possible impact of that transition is Lucy Williamson, Korea correspondent for the BBC. Good morning, Lucy.
Good morning.
So where does North Korea's economy go from here?
Where North Korea's economy goes from here is pretty much where it's been for the last 15 years or so. It really suffered from the collapse of the former Soviet Union and has been largely relying on food aid handouts and support from China in the meantime. That's one of the reasons why countries here in the region are so concerned about this political transition, because the only previous transition North Korea has been through 17 years ago was when the country was in a much better state economically and in terms of quality of life. So I think at the moment people are watching very carefully to see what kind of signs there are that this transition is going to go smoothly.
Does the death of Kim Jong-il change North Korea's economic role in the region right now?
It's less than 12 hours since we've heard this news, since it was announced. And so I imagine there are key decisions being taken behind closed doors in North Korea, but this is the world's most secretive country, and it's very difficult for outsiders to know which direction the wind's blowing it.
What kind of economic change might we see?
Well, again, it depends very much on how much power, how much authority this new leader has. I mean, his options are fairly limited. His father initiated a policy of military first, which meant that the military got the first of everything. It got the first of the resources. It had a large say in the running of the country. To try and undo that is likely to be quite difficult. The military has seemed to be a major power broker now in North Korea. And so, if anything, that's going to be quite a difficult economic pattern to unravel. But also, it's very difficult to see how North Korea can boost its economy without radically changing its ideology and radically changing the way it runs the country. So all of these go to the heart of what countries here in the region are concerned about, which is which direction North Korea is going to go, and is it going to become more isolated? Is it going to engage more with the international community? And at the heart of all those issues, of course, is North Korea's nuclear program, which is really at the core of people's worries about it.
Lucy Williamson is the Korea correspondent for the BBC. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
South Korea is on high alert this morning, and all that uncertainty around the death of Kim Jong-il has rattled Asian markets. Let's do the numbers. Uncertainty over the power transition in North Korea has pushed Asian markets down this morning. Markets in Europe are up. The DAX has climbed about 0.75%. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 2 points at 11,867. It's gridlock again in Washington today. House Republicans decided not to go along with a bipartisan payroll tax cut bill approved by the Senate over the weekend. Congressmen are back at work today. And the carmaker Saab has filed for bankruptcy, which likely means the end of the automaker, this time for real.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering IRA savings products and a Raise Your Rate 4-year CD. Learn more at allybank.com. And by Money Magazine, a personal finance magazine now accessible on tablets like iPad, Nook Color, Kindle Fire, and select Android devices. Money.com/allaccess.
Part of the fun of the new year is looking backward to the economic year that was and to indulge in just a little crystal ball gazing to the year ahead. Joining me now is Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Adrian.
So markets today are almost exactly where they were at the beginning of the year. Did all the volatility and up and down actually mean anything?
Well, the question is, if you get on a roller coaster, it goes up and down and swings around, and you get off at pretty much the same place you got on, has it meant anything? The answer is you had a lot of fun and your stomach lurched.
A lot of adrenaline.
Well, that is what we do here, isn't it?
So what is the business story of the year that maybe we didn't talk about as much as we should have?
Now, I think the business story of the year is I think things may actually be getting better. But one of the reasons we didn't talk about it is that I can't prove that. It's a feeling I have because it's been now, depending on when you start to count, 5 or 6 years since things started falling apart. And it's time for them to get better. And I think they probably are.
Well, that's a story to look forward to in 2012. But tell me that next year we won't have to keep talking about Greek debt over and over and over.
I'll tell you that, but
but you don't mean it.
Won't, but I don't mean it. I suspect I'm going to have to learn how to pronounce drachma correctly, that being the Greek currency, because something is going to happen. Now, if I knew what it was, I would A, be rich, and B, more than happy to tell our listeners, but I don't know. But it's going to still be a story in 2012.
All right. We'll look ahead to 2012. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And finally, the most annoying word of 2012 isn't like, and it's not like, well, you know. No, it's whatever. That's according to a survey by the Marist Institute for Public Opinion. Whatever they say is, like, seriously annoying to people. Literally. I'm just saying. Whatever. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrian Hill. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
You know those big brown delivery trucks you see on the road? Apparently, sometimes they come in green, as in good for the environment.
I've been driving for 34 years with UPS. My previous package car used to gas up every week, and now I gas up once a month.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Corporate Sustainability Officers, and what exactly they do. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.